All right, everybody, welcome to the Hunter's Quest podcast. This is your host, Hunter McWaters. It's been a minute, but it is November 12th. I've been on the road traveling, but today I am joined by my friend Taylor from Ducks Unlimited. How you doing, sir?
Good, good. How about you? Happy to be here.
Yeah, man, doing good. a little tired of feeling a little under the weather. Came back from the last trip with a little bit of a cold, but other than that, pretty good. I know you have just, well, before we jump in, so in October, Taylor joined me in Wyoming for a little collaboration hunt slash episode with Ducks Unlimited. Ducks Unlimited is an organization that my family has been involved in for a long time. My dad's, ever since I can remember, had the Ducks Unlimited magazines around the house. I've watched the TV show, and I got my start in the outdoors with my dad hunting waterfowl. So my dad is still involved, as a volunteer and as a donor and all that stuff with Ducks Unlimited. But I met Taylor at a Ducks Unlimited banquet. I'll let Taylor get more into what exactly Ducks Unlimited is and what they do. But I met Taylor at a Ducks Unlimited banquet, I guess, last year. And, I'm always thinking of ways that I can, reach a broader audience, but also do my part for conservation. And we just kind of started spitballing ideas, and I was like, hey man, wouldn't it be cool to do a combination waterfowl and big game hunt? Because I remember going out to Wyoming to hunt antelope and always seeing a lot of times on public land, little potholes and little ponds and stuff full of ducks that nobody really seemed to be messing with. And I always thought it'd be cool to do a combination waterfowl antelope hunt. So we started talking about it, and that led us to planning this trip, and we did just that. So we're going to jump into that and talk about why we did it and how it was and recap the hunt and all that. But first, I just want to give you guys a little background and jump in and talk to Taylor a little bit and have him introduce himself and talk about DU. So Taylor, I know that your duck season just started. So how's it been going so far?
Good, good. Yeah. So I'm over here in Delaware. We had our first split of the season just closed this past Sunday. Had a good amount of birds around for this early in the season. It's been a fantastic year in my neck of the woods for acorns. So big mass drop this year.
Seems like everywhere there's been great acorns this year.
Yeah, yeah. So, and I wasn't sure how widespread it was, but certainly here in Delaware and in Sussex County, it's been impressive. And we're seeing wood ducks in areas where we typically wouldn't. We had some mallards around, some black ducks. We shot a couple pintails, teal. Nice. So it was a good week.
Yeah, man. And so you obviously work for Ducks Unlimited. But we talked about it a little bit before, you also have a big thing for turkeys, am I right?
Oh, that's for sure. Yes. I got it really heavy into turkey hunting a couple years ago, and I'm glad that duck season and turkey season don't overlap, because I don't know which way I would go.
And also, you just sent me a picture just the other day. You shot a pretty nice whitetail with your bow, huh? Tell me about that.
I did, yes. The rut's kicking up here. I managed to slip out for a morning hunt, and I wasn't in my stand, but, 45 minutes or so, and had a decent 10-point come chasing a yearling doe through the woods, and he gave me a broadside shot at 25 yards, and wow. Yeah, managed to connect. So perfect. That's my best buck with a bow.
Is that on one of your duck properties, or where was that at?
So a friend of mine has a farm just around the corner from my house. So it was super convenient, because I can normally slip over there, hunt for a little bit in the morning or in the evening after work, and still be back in front of my computer, for my day-to-day operations.
That's nice, man. Yeah, can't beat that. I'm still about an hour realistically from where I can kind of hunt, but which isn't bad, but But obviously, as you know, most of my stuff, I'm like, a several hour plane ride from what I'm doing.
That's true.
Although I'm kind of trying to, I'm thinking about trying to get back to my roots a little bit and do some more stuff. And even just, man, just I've been feeling like the call lately just to like grab my grandpa's old 3030 and just like go hit the woods near my house, no cameras, nothing, just get back to basics and have a little fun, man, because it's been a heck of a season for me. It's been a tough one, to be honest.
Yeah, no, I can only imagine just the added layer and the stress that, trying to run your business and film episodes so you have that content. I mean, that's got to really change the dynamic for you when you're in the field. I'm sure when you've
It
been doing it
does.
as long as you have though too, you've kind of settled into it. But and we'll talk about this more as far as our hunt went out in Wyoming, but yeah, it was impressive to see all the behind the scenes.
Yeah. Well, to be honest, I don't know if I have settled into it. I'm still fairly new to mountain hunting, and I still have to work really hard to try to be successful, and there is that pressure that comes with. It's maybe, I don't know, maybe it's weird for some people, maybe it is weird for everybody, I don't know, but it is different when you take something that's, a pastime, a sport, a hobby, recreation, passion, whatever you want to call it, and try to turn that into a career. It definitely changes the dynamics. That stuff, something that I've been kind of wrestling with lately. Like I said, just thinking more about just kind of getting back to the heart of it and having some more fun with it, because you don't want that pressure to get too much, because then you see people doing dumb stuff or making mistakes, and I've certainly made my share of mistakes. So, trying to keep it fresh and enjoy it at the same time, and I don't know, just something I've been thinking about lately. So it's just coming straight off the cuff there for you, but yeah, I would love to hear your feedback maybe on how that went from your end, but let's dive into this thing, man. And then also going back to you, so I guess tell people a little bit just about from a high level about you, about Ducks Unlimited, what you do there, what Ducks Unlimited does, and then we can kind of tie that into how we started planning this hunt.
Yeah, sure, of course. So I guess I'll start with Ducks Unlimited in general and the founding. So it was founded in 1937 by a group of sportsmen who recognized that waterfowl populations in this country were heading down a really dark road. And if something didn't change and change drastically, that resource was going to cease to exist. So when they started off in 1937, the whole goal of the organization has been to conserve wetlands habitat for the benefit of waterfowl. Obviously, as we talk about in the episode and as we'll touch on here, that's certainly got a lot of broader implications for and benefits for other species, us just as people, fish, recreation, you name it. But the primary focus was on waterfowl. And until the 80s, all the dollars that Ducks Unlimited was raising was going into conservation up in Prairie Canada. This is the duck factory. That's where the majority of this nation's waterfowl that we experience every fall during the migration originate from. Once we got into the 80s, that's when DU started doing some projects down here in the U.S. To ensure that waterfowl had the resources that they needed, not just up on the breeding grounds in Canada, but throughout the entirety of their migration. And so that's where we're at today. We're a 501c3 nonprofit. We've managed to conserve about 19 million acres since the creation of the organization. And over the last 2 years in a row, we've managed to deliver over 1 million acres of conservation in each of those years.
Yeah. Real
I'm
quick, let
and
me jump in.
yeah,
So when you say
sure.
like you conserve, what does that look like? Does that look like buying tracts of land and like closing them off to development? What does that look like?
Yeah, so it takes a lot of different forms. We don't hold really too many properties. If we do, it's only for short periods, typically, where Ducks Unlimited might purchase a property until such time as one of our partners, whether it be like, state parks or federal refuge or something like that, is able to get their funds together to then purchase it. DU is able to move a little bit more fluidly and quickly in those situations to make sure that a property wouldn't end up going to development or something like that.
Cool.
So we'll act as that intermediary, but oftentimes it's doing restoration and conservation projects on various pieces of property, whether it's private land, public land. If there's somewhere where we can restore a wetland, preserve it, put it into an easement to ensure that that place is going to be there going down the line and act as, a resource for those waterfowl to use, we're there.
Gotcha. Okay, so, cool. Sorry to cut you off.
No, not a problem. And so, as you mentioned, I do work for Ducks Unlimited. I've been with DU for 6 years, so I got hired in 2019. I started off as what's called a regional director, where I was helping all of our logistics for our volunteer-led committees. I did that for just the state of Delaware. Delaware certainly punches above its weight class when it comes to fundraising from the grassroots standpoint, despite our small geographic footprint. So my territory was the state of Delaware, and right now they tend to bring in about $1 million in grassroots revenue each year. But I was in that position for 4 years, and then I just within the last 2 years switched over to what's called development. So now I work with all of our philanthropic giving within Maryland and Delaware, essentially raising dollars from our major donor program through individuals, corporations, and foundations.
Okay.
And then we take those dollars, send them to HQ, and they either can send those dollars out to areas of highest need, or the folks that become major donors have the ability to say, I live in Delaware, I live in Arkansas, I live in Missouri, wherever it might be across this country. And they might say, I'm going to give this money to DU, but I want it to stay here in my territory where I recreate. And so by becoming a major donor, those folks have that autonomy over their donations. DU, for every dollar that we bring in, we guarantee that 80% of it is going back to that mission of conserving waterfowl habitat. With over the last couple of years, it's been higher. We've been, I think, upwards of 83, 85, 87%, which is extremely efficient in terms of the nonprofit world. But we guarantee that at a minimum, it'll be 80%, but we're always shooting to ensure that we can be as efficient as we can with the dollars that we're raising.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people listening will be, familiar, maybe more so with like a Mule Deer Foundation or a Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation. But so you guys are similar to those type of organizations. We're doing on the ground restoration projects and then also working with, local governments and stuff like that. And like you said, land acquisitions and that kind of thing. But definitely one of the oldest, if not the oldest, I'm not sure, like conservation organizations in North America. And, I don't want to go too deep on this, but like the one thing that I really found compelling when we started this whole conversation about this hunt and kind of just me learning myself more about DU and stuff, was you had mentioned, and you talk about in the episode too, but the Audubon Society, which is obviously not a hunting organization. I would venture to say they're probably anti-hunting, but I don't quote me on that. But a non-hunting nature organization, which they typically tend to be a little bit left-leaning, did a survey of all birds in North America, which, predatory birds, songbirds, shorebirds, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And that all of the categories were in decline except for one, which was waterfowl. And so that's a third party organization really giving credence to the fact that, in my view, the North American model of conservation works, that hunters are, for the most part, conservationists. And, by supporting organizations like DU or Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation or whatever it may be, giving back to conservation and just the dollars you spend really has an impact on protecting these species. So that's pretty cool.
Completely. No, you hit it right on the head. Like you said, you've got a third-party group who's essentially validating the work that Ducks Unlimited has been doing over these last several decades, coming up on nearly 90 years in the game, and it's tremendous. It's unfortunate the state of the birds as a whole, when you look across this country, because I mean, I even as a hunter, I want there to be the full gamut of songbirds, and
For sure.
no matter what it is, we want that full suite of nature to be out there. It enhances everybody's experience, as well as it being pivotal for the ecosystem. But it, like you said, it's fantastic to see. And in that report, Audubon pointed directly to the work that Ducks Unlimited does for the
Oh,
reason
cool.
why waterfowl are still in an advantageous position. We
That's
still had a
cool.
couple of tough years these last couple of seasons with drought out on the prairies and the breeding grounds. But it's even more important the work that Ducks Unlimited is doing to ensure that when the rains do return, and those wetlands begin to fill up, that those wetlands are even there in the first place to receive that water. Because it's very easy to drive past places right now and look at them, and there's crops planted in them and stuff like that. But during a normal year or a wet year, those would be wetlands that are supporting waterfowl. So, but somebody drives past it and says, "Oh no, that's not a wetland. We can develop that," or whatever it might be. So it's extremely important, even during these drought years, that we're continuing to conserve and make sure that, again, those resources are going to be there.
Yeah, for sure, man. So, and then as we kind of alluded to before, and you can see it in a very real way, like, and especially in a place called, or a place like Wyoming, or other places out west that are semi-arid, obviously every living thing needs water to survive. And really what you guys are doing, you're a waterfowl conservation organization, but really you're a wetlands conservation organization, which, has trickle down benefits for obviously humans, but every animal on the ecosystem, especially like I said, in semi-arid places. I mean, we saw firsthand when we were out there, ducks and antelope using the same water source. I don't think we actually physically saw antelope drinking out of the pond, but they were in the area. It was quite obvious they were using that as a water source. And obviously, all these little potholes and stuff like that out in the prairie are going to be extremely important for mule deer, elk if they're in the area, pronghorn, other types of birds. So that was kind of one of the things that we wanted to highlight and to show through this episode, is that wetlands conservation is wildlife conservation. And if you know anything about ecology, you just know the importance of wetlands on the ecosystem. So yeah, so that was kind of one of the things we wanted to show. So we decided we were going to go and do this combination waterfowl big game hunt. And so we were going to go to Wyoming, do a antelope and duck combo, kind of I'd always thought about before in the past, like I'd always thought about in the past. And and kind of the cool thing about it was too, was that you have done some hunting out west and been on some western hunts, but you had not to this point taken your first western big game animal. And I, though I grew up, waterfowl hunting, most of that was done, with my dad kind of leading the way, or other more experienced friends. I kind of went more the big game route at about age 14 when I sort of got an opportunity to do that. So, while I'm not like completely inexperienced waterfowler, I don't have the depth of knowledge that you have, like, spending a lot of your time and energy as an adult, even, on waterfowl hunting, just about, wind conditions and decoy spreads and just everything that I found myself, asking you a lot of questions and falling back. And that was kind of the idea of the hunt, was sort of, hey, I'm gonna help you come out, get your first Western big game animal. You're gonna help me, kill some ducks, and we're gonna learn from each other and have a good time. And went pretty well,
Yeah, it came together perfectly.
huh? So, what were your, I guess, thoughts coming into this? What were your expectations? Were you excited? Were you excited about the antelope part, the duck part, or both? What was going through your head with it?
Yeah, so as you mentioned, I've been out to Wyoming a couple times, just to help with big game hunts. I've never been the person with a tag in my pocket, but some friends of mine have been. And so I would always just go out to tag along, help break down an animal if necessary, scout. And then we would, after the big game portion was finished, we'd go and duck hunt. So I knew the potential that we could have to have a couple of good duck shoots, just because I'd seen that. And then as far as the antelope goes, like you said, I kind of knew roughly how that would go. I had kind of an outline in my head, but I was really excited to finally be the person behind the trigger. Because I mean, I love food. I enjoy wild game. And so the last time that we were out there, and my buddy Trey harvested an antelope. I mean, it was fantastic. We made some tacos that night right after his harvest. So I was really excited to, have that meat in my freezer. And just to again be out back in the West, because it's such a wild place compared to the East Coast. The views, the animals that you see, it's incredible.
Yeah, man. So, for folks listening, we actually teamed up. Well, I don't know if I'd say teamed up, but well, kind of teamed up with Infinite Outdoors, which they're pretty cool. I would check them out. Certain landowners, I guess, out west or local people out west may have complex emotions towards it, but as an out-of-state hunter looking for opportunities, it's pretty cool. I don't know what the long-term impacts will be, so I'm just throwing that out there. But we did work with them, and basically we told them, "Hey, we want to do this is what we want to do. Do you have any properties that would work for this?" And what Infinite Outdoors does is you could look at it almost like a Airbnb type app or website that matches hunters with private land to basically do like a 1 week or 5 day kind of rental lease type of agreement. So again, take that for what it was. You might think that's amazing, you might think it's terrible, but either way, it's there, it's pretty cool, gave us this opportunity. And we went to them and said, "Hey, do you have any properties where we could get on a good antelope hunt and do some duck shoots?" And I say that just out of transparency, but also it is very doable to do this on public land. Like Taylor just said, he has done this on public land. I've been to places when I did my first antelope hunt. Like I said, like this idea was born from public land where we killed antelope, and just like Taylor did on his hunt, they killed an antelope, and then found ponds or potholes or whatever you want to call them, water sources on public with ducks and had good duck shoots. So you can 100% do this on public land. We decided to go this route just because we had limited time and we had, we wanted to fill two tags and have some good duck shoots. And with my schedule and the limited time, it just made more sense to go this way. But this can definitely be done public land. You would agree, Taylor?
Oh, 1,000%. Like you said, I mean, we've done this multiple times now. The majority of the hunting that I do is still on public land, but out west especially, yeah, we've had some great success both on the antelope and on the duck side. Going out there too with just minimal resources, four guys in a truck and handful of decoys and some rifles and shotguns.
It's a really cool hunt. I would encourage people to try it if you got the gear and the time and you want to do something a little extra when you go out there. Either way, you should bring a shotgun if you're driving out west, because it seems like half the time, I get into a place that's got some upland game or small game or something. I'm like, dang, I wish I had a shotgun. But anyway, with a little bit of planning, a little bit of e-scouting, you can definitely pull this off. And it's a very unique and pretty cool hunt. So anyway, I planned this up. We got an Airbnb in Glenrock. Really good Airbnb. It was like a little cabin. Like it was pretty cool. I mean, it had everything we needed. It was in town, but also like there was every single time there was turkeys, whitetail, and or mule deer in the yard. So like it felt like you were out in the country and like you're like a little at like a little hunting lodge, but you were like right in town at an Airbnb.
Yeah, extremely unique. I've certainly never stayed at an Airbnb like it.
Only problem was if you didn't park right, you would get completely just dumped with turkey droppings.
Yeah, I mean, there was about 30 hens in their poults roosted right above us there, and it was cool to watch them go up into the roost every night.
Yeah.
But yeah, we learned quickly, do not park under the trees.
Yep. So yeah, when we got there, we went out. The property we had access to had some riverfront, and it had a small pond on it. And the antelope property was broken up into two chunks. There was a chunk, two chunks on different sides of the road, the highway basically. And so we went out that first night, and we just kind of looked around to see what the antelope situation was. We had the goal of getting to the pond to see what birds were on there. We weren't able to do that, but we drove by at one point on the road. But mainly, I, of course, because of me, I my and probably the same with Taylor. Like my thing was like, all right, let's see what kind of antelope are out there. And I think like just reading between the lines, he was probably like a little bit more like, all right, let's see what's on the pond.
But it's right over there. It's just over that hill.
Yeah. So I don't know. What did you, what were your, oh, we also checked rifles that night, I think, and just made sure we were on point. I loaned Taylor, my X-Bolt Speed 2, another one that I have, and 300 Win Mag, with a Leupold VX6 HD, 4 to 24. And, he has some rifle experience, but not a ton. And I pretty much, I got it bore sighted for him, and then just kind of gave it to him and said, go for it, have at it. So how was your experience with that and getting that thing all set up?
Yeah, no, I really appreciated that. It was a sweet rifle. The glass that you had on there, that Leupold scope, was fantastic. Absolutely loved being behind it. As you mentioned, again, being out here on the East Coast, everywhere where I've always hunted, just near me, that's been quickly accessible, it has been no rifle hunting. So I've never had
Yep.
the need for a hunting rifle. It's always been muzzleloaders, shotguns, straight wall pistol cartridges, archery. So again, I was like, well, I know at some point I'm going to buy one if I'm going to continue to expand my Western hunting, but it was really nice not to, just have to go out and buy something that I didn't necessarily know that much about,
Yeah.
and be able to get comfortable with one and then have you kind of walking me through different tips and tricks for it.
Yeah.
So I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, it's a whole thing, man. And same with me growing up where I was hunting. We grew up actually hunting some of the same areas on the eastern shore of Virginia. And same thing, I grew up archery and shotgun only and muzzleloader. So it's been a fun journey for me, one that I'm very much still on, learning about rifles and ballistics and shooting long range. It's been really fun. So yeah, and that same thing, man, for me. I mean, the X-Bolt has been a really good rifle. I've shot some of the best groups of my entire life with that thing. So anyway, really good rifle, and good price, good company. So I would, if you're looking for a rifle, I would consider an X-Bolt Speed 2. They're pretty sweet, and they come in a lot of different like options as far as trim and custom stocks and carbon barrels and short barrels and a lot of different options. But anyway, so yeah, we checked our rifles. Everything was looking good there. We went out, looked at some antelope, and we were seeing quite a few. Nothing crazy size wise, but like quite a few antelope right off the bat. What were you thinking as far as that was going?
Yeah, once I started seeing that many, like I expected that we were going to see antelope. I didn't have a question about that, but I was very impressed by the quantity of them,
Yeah.
the number of bucks, the overall herd size of them. It was cool too because we were seeing a lot of rut action happening as well. So, just running all over, tending their does. That was an impressive number that we saw just in that first night.
Did you start getting excited about it at that point, or are you already
Oh,
excited?
I was already excited, but that was kind of just reassuring. Just, we've just flown over halfway across the country. Invested all this time and effort into getting here, so that was like, okay, hey, I think this is gonna happen.
Yep. Yeah, man, it's always for me like it's always like that. I've always come a long way, and usually excuse me, more often than not it's a chunk of public ground that I've never been before and only seen on a computer screen. And just my personality, I've gotten pretty good at e-scouting, so I'm gaining some confidence there. Like, for the most part, if I have enough time to plan an e-scout on Onyx, like, I can pretty much confidently find somewhere where I'd like know I'm gonna find animals. But still, when I get there, it's always like I'm just like always second guessing myself until you see that first couple animals and you're like, oh yes, thank you, thank you. But yeah, same thing for me. I was like, I think I even said to you, I was like, man, like we could probably fill both our antelope tags like right now if you want, like the first night. But that's not what we wanted to do. We wanted to have the full experience and try to, since we knew there was animals around, like let's try to get some good ones. We decided, in my mind when we planned the hunt, I'd kind of had like thinking like, okay, well, we'll go shoot ducks in the morning and then we'll hunt antelope during the day. And that's kind of how I always like framed it to myself and others. But it became sort of apparent that, well, A, we didn't have time to go look at the pond before it got dark, and we didn't want to go in completely blind. But then after that forced morning hunt, too, it also just kind of became apparent that, like, it was going to work better if we were, like, sort of focused on one thing at a time. Like, let's focus on an antelope, and then when we're done, Lord willing, let's then shoot some ducks.
We managed, I think that first night we got over to the pond right as probably the majority of birds had already headed off to
That's
roost.
right.
I think we caught a couple of them heading back to the river.
That's right.
But we weren't sure what had been there prior in the day. So
Yep.
yeah, that was definitely, I think, the good call to just, focus on trying to get two good bucks down and then switch gears over to ducks as opposed to
Yeah.
going from, waders to rifles back to waders and
Yeah. Yeah. Which not to say it can't be done.
Oh
I
no,
will,
right.
and I will say like if you want to hunt that way, this is one of the hunts that you could do that because antelope aren't like deer where they're like super crepuscular, like only moving, in those first hour or two. Like you could easily go out and do a duck shoot, come back, change, and then go hunt antelope, like if you wanted
Yes.
to. Because the antelope, as we saw, they were moving pretty much all day.
Right. Yeah, I think as we'll cover, I mean, we ended up getting both of ours right in the middle of the day.
Yeah, that's right. So anyway, we decided that's what we're gonna do. I remember as we were driving into the property, we hadn't reached the property line yet. I think it was on some public, and I look over and there's like a pretty dang nice buck, the biggest one we had seen to this point. We'd probably seen at least a half a dozen bucks, if not more, the night before. But I remember saying, "Ooh, that's a pretty good one," and he was kind of working towards the property, but not on the property yet. And then we went in, we parked, and our general plan was like to try to make our way over to this pond on foot and sort of hunt our way over that way to explore the property and see if we could see what the duck situation was like. So we get up on this first kind of hill and we're looking around, and I look over and that buck we saw as we were driving in is like practically pretty much running straight at us. And we started, I got the spotter out. We looked at it. I was like, okay, this is actually a pretty good buck. And then we started kind of looking at it. And then, I don't know, what were your thoughts on that guy once you got a good look at him?
Yeah, I mean, and I think I said this to you the whole time is my mindset was going to be that I was not going to necessarily pass on anything on the first day that I'd be happy with on the last.
Yeah.
Obviously I wanted to take a good quality mature animal. But at that point, we had seen so many so quickly too. It was like, okay, I think I can probably slow myself down a little bit here.
Yeah.
But this is a really good animal that's standing here in front of us.
Yeah.
So,
And you'd seen
I
enough at
certainly,
that point to realize that he was a good one.
Exactly. So you started to point out, the things to look for as far as their height, their cutters. So paying attention to all of that, you could kind of quickly, be able to judge like, okay, yeah, that's a, above average one there that we're looking at.
All right, guys, I want to talk about one extremely important tool that doesn't get probably talked about enough, but is used constantly. I know I'm always on it, especially as an out-of-state hunter. Having quality maps that I can rely on and trust, not only from the e-scouting phase, but all the way into the field. Me coming from the East Coast and doing a lot of mountain hunting, I'm still not 100% where I want to be as far as reading and interpreting land as I'm going. So I rely heavily on Onyx maps when I'm in the field. So if you guys don't know Onyx, you must be living under a rock. But if you go now, if you want to join, I recommend joining and getting an elite membership and use the code QUEST when you sign up, and you will save on that membership. Like I said, it's the most valuable and one of the most important tools you can have for a successful hunt, and a tool you can use all year round. So go to onxhunt.com and use that code QUEST. So getting back in it. So we saw this buck come in. I realized it was the same buck that we'd seen on the way in. Noticeably bigger than anything else we'd seen in the past, day and a half being there. And I'm looking at a video of him right now. Really good height, good hooks on him, great mass, and solid cutters. And just like I said, just noticeably bigger than what we've been looking at. And you could tell as he ran up closer towards us, he ran up to some other bucks and was kind of pushing them around and stuff. You could just tell he was a dominant, mature animal. So at that point, I'm telling you all this stuff, and you're kind of like, yeah, I mean, I'd be happy with that one and stuff. And so we kind of decided that was our target antelope. But we didn't really have a move on him necessarily right there. He was kind of like, the only thing we could do is just like walk straight at him, basically. So we kind of hung out, waited for him to go on the other side of a rise. And then we basically kind of went after him once he was out of sight, and we kind of played this cat and mouse game for a while, and eventually ended up on the other side of the property next to some power lines and watching a bunch of antelope. This time of year they're rutting, so their movement is like really sporadic. They're kind of all over the place. Like, you don't know if they're gonna run 50 yards from you, or if they're going to be 500 yards from you, or could be both within the span of 5 minutes.
And we experienced all of that.
I'm not going to necessarily do like a play-by-play of every single thing we did. Just suffice it to say, we were trying to work our way into antelope, and also had opportunities at other ones too. But give me kind of like your pers and you don't have to give play by play either if you don't want to, but just kind of give me your perspective on how that morning went, and like what was going on before the ultimate final stalk.
Yeah, I mean, again, like you said, you cannot believe how much ground those things can cover in an instant. For folks who haven't hunted them before, I mean, like you're saying, you would feel like you were like, okay, if we go down over this hill, come around this corner, we're gonna have a good shot at being within range of this buck. And you'd get over there and you'd look, and the thing is 1,000 yards away across. Like, when on earth did that thing have the opportunity to make it that far? And then just as quickly as you're thinking, oh, it's over, here he would come back. And so we, like you said, we were playing this cat and mouse game, and there was often times I think in my head where I was thinking, what is the right move here? Do we just need to stay put? And then as you're sitting there waiting for things to play out, you're watching them just hanging out, milling around, eating food. Some of them would bed down. It's like, oh no, we got to go right over there. And you'd run over there, and then next thing you know, and not even because you were pushing them, they just decided they were moving. So it was fun to try and play that mental game of it, of again, what is the appropriate thing to do here? Am I better off just sitting put, or do we need to just try and press our luck or make a move to put ourselves in a better position? Which I enjoyed. I mean, we certainly got our steps in.
And I guess, like, for me, I guess probably I tend to be a little bit more aggressive on like, all right, let's just go after him kind of deal. Which sometimes is the right call, sometimes you're right. Sometimes you gotta kind of sit there, and we did that for a little bit. There was very little cover out there, but for a bit, like mid-morning, we'd made it to some power lines, and that was a spot we could kind of like put our packs down, assess the situation, because we'd already kind of sort of went on like a couple stalks that didn't quite work out. There we kind of like put on our packs, we're glassing, trying to make a little bit of a plan. I had my spotter out, and it was cool for me. Not that I was guiding you at all, because you were a very active participant in the whole hunt, and were making spots and helping make decisions the whole time too. So not like saying I was your guide or anything, but it was fun for me to like be just more in the mindset of, okay, I'm gonna help Taylor get his first. And I had the spotter out, and I was, getting the spotter out, checking bucks, and it also made it really fun that we had one specific buck in mind that we were going after. And at one point, we did have another buck that looked almost as good. He looked, he kind of looked about the same. In retrospect, I think he was a little smaller, but he was walking straight at us and went down behind a rise, and we were expecting him to pop up like 50 yards in front of us, and he didn't. But anyway, I just really enjoyed just being in that different perspective and looking for one specific animal and helping you. And we did eventually. There was a group of does that we had seen, and we were pretty sure we had seen your buck kind of milling around with those does at some point. And then at some point we lost him, but the does had bedded down over, honestly, practically back by our truck. And so we kind of had made a plan, like, all right, well, we're not sure. And correct me if I'm getting any of this wrong, because my memory is not always great. But at that point, we made a kind of a plan. Let's work our way over to there. We're not exactly sure where the buck is, but we know he was somewhere with those does. Let's get behind him on the ridge they're on and get, as close as we can to where we think they're at, and then try to sneak up the top of that ridge where we can get a visual and see if we can find that buck. So take it from there. Take me out from your perspective.
Sure. So we get back over to the same ridge where all those does are bedded down. They were bedded down, I guess I'm trying to remember. I think it would have been essentially the south side of that slope. And we got back on the northern side. Came up over the top because originally from where we had initially spotted them from, you had the group of does bedded down towards the top of the hill, and the buck had been further to our left or further to the left side of them. So when we came over and around that hill and came up and over, we were expecting him to be to the right. So we had marked the power lines where we thought those does were bedded, made a move to come up. It would have been, I guess, just to the east side of them. And when we looked up and over the ridge, we didn't see anything. No antelope were in front of us. So it's like, okay, we must not have come down this ridge far enough to the right power lines. So we ducked back down. We went a little bit further to the west, came back up over the ridge again. And I remember we did that, I looked to my left. And initially, when I came over, I didn't see anything. But at that point, our wind was blowing towards their bedding area and just started seeing ears pop up on the horizon, and bouncing away from us left to right. And I think I alerted you of that. And we're scanning this whole group, but the buck is nowhere to be seen. And so we didn't feel like, they didn't go tearing out of there too bad. They had gotten up and they were certainly aware of our presence. But before we boogered things and before we came over the ridge too much more, we decided to just back down, get back behind the hill, and continue our way to the, again, I guess it would have been to the west. Just to see if that buck was anywhere else in range. And as we did that, we're coming around this small knob on the backside of the hill. And just as we crested, I happened to look across to sort of this next hill in front of us, and I could see an animal bedded down. And that's all I saw at that moment. So I point, say, hey, there's one up in front of us. We all duck down. You get on the spotting scope and your binos, and you immediately you're like, "Hey, this is him," and which I couldn't believe. I just was doing everything that I could to stay out of its view until we confirmed or not whether, you know, this was him and we were going to go after him. You said, "Hey, let me range him," and you hit it. He was right at 200 yards. Confirmed this is the one that we were going after. We made a small move to get a little bit better shooting rest, and it got set up. I had to adjust things a couple times with trying to shoot off of my pack. Initially, I was on my stomach trying to shoot prone, but just too much brush, wasn't able to see him at that point. So ended up sitting on my butt with the rifle stock resting on the top of my frame pack. Managed to get a good hold, and just as I'm doing that, and you're confirming that you're filming, and so is Jamin, your cameraman. Everybody's good. That buck stands up for us out of his bed. And again, we were downwind of him. Don't think that he saw us or anything like that. Just probably was aware of the commotion that was kind of going on. Maybe the doe's running around. He heard something there. But for whatever reason, stood up and again presented me with a great broadside shot right at 200 yards. And the X-Bolt did its thing and dropped him right in his tracks.
Yeah, man. I remember. Yeah, you made a great spot on him as we were. Once we busted those does, we came down, and I was like, "We got to move kind of quick down this ridge to see, you know, maybe because I was still thinking maybe he's in there with them or something." So we're moving kind of quick, and then yeah, you made a great spot on the thing. Get down, pull up the thing. I was like, "Man, I cannot believe it." And I've looked at the footage too, so I kind of like chuckle. I'm like, "I think that's him, man." And then I ranged him, and I was like, "Okay, perfect." And I said to you, I was like, "All right. We're gonna go up here. We're gonna crawl up to the top of this thing, and you're gonna kill him." You're like, "All right, sounds like a plan."
It was very blunt. It was like, "This is what's gonna happen."
And so I remember I've been in the opposite. I've been in your shoes with other guys, and that always made me feel better. And they're just like very optimistic and like matter of fact, like this is what's gonna happen. We're gonna go kill him. So anyway, yeah, we did, and you got up there, made a good shot, like you said, dropped him, and yeah, really good buck, man. I think we taped him out later. He was, I think, like around 72 or something, which is like
Yeah,
anything
right
over
around that.
70 is like really solid, especially for your first one. Great buck. I mean, honestly, I think your buck to that point was bigger than any of the ones I've shot.
Yeah, I remember you saying that too. You're right.
Great buck, and yeah, it all was just it was just pretty much perfect, man. And again, just like finding that one specific one and putting and spending all day hunting that one, it was really cool, man. So what were you
Yeah.
thinking after that?
No, I was completely tickled. I was really proud of myself for making a clean shot on him. Again, my first rifle kill for big game. So,
Oh, really?
yeah, yes, yep. That was
Nice.
really special for me. Again, just to be out there in that setting, and then as well to have it captured on camera. I mean, I'm probably in the small minority of folks who can say that they have, you know, one of their first big game animals captured not only on film but in a production such as what you and again your cameraman Jamin put together. It was fantastic to see kind of the preview that you guys showed me. So I'm really, you know, thankful to have those memories for forever now.
Yeah, man, that's a lot of firsts. That is pretty cool. I didn't know it was your first rifle kill too, but yeah, so I guess what are your thoughts on, or what was it like, I guess, from your point of view, like with the production and the cameras and all that? 'Cause it's like, you know, it's second nature to me now. It's pretty normal, but like it's completely new experience for you. So what was that like?
Yeah, it was. I was very impressed. I mean, you and you, because both you and your cameraman, you know, took turns running cameras. Obviously, Jamin ran things the majority of the time, but when there a need came for two cameras to be rolling, it was cool that you also had that experience to be able to get that additional perspective of the things that are happening in front of us. But it certainly added another layer of complexity there to the whole thing because, obviously, we're there to hunt. We're there to, you know, try and fill our tags. But if you're not capturing on film, it's not doing much for the story that we're trying to tell and put together. So having to slow down that additional second to ensure that everybody is set up, everybody has the animal in their view in the camera lens, and then just trying to conceal, a third person as well. I mean, that's one more person whose scent could potentially give you away, whose movement can give you away. Was another just cool layer to try and navigate throughout this whole thing. And I mean, there was a couple instances where, we weren't fast enough. People couldn't get set quick enough in time. And that was okay. It all ended up working out. But I'm thinking about any of the productions that you see on TV around hunting. Just man, it's cool that, it's that you're able to still capture those moments despite this, added issue that you're having to try and overcome.
Yeah, it's not easy, man. It's definitely not easy, and we try to, I try to always produce high level, high quality stuff. And like you said, obviously I'm a hunter first and I want to be successful. But the camera and the, production work is what allows me to do it this much on this level. And so that's something I gotta remember and make sure we're getting what we need from a production standpoint as well. And that, as we were alluding to earlier, that comes with its own set of challenges and difficulties and stuff like that. I don't want to sound like I'm complaining at all, but it's just the reality. And so that's still stuff I'm working through and learning and all that, but doing my best. So, but yeah, anyway, it was a great morning. Got your buck. Nice buck. And then we kind of got him taken care of, got pictures, got the meat taken care of. I think we went back to the Airbnb and cut up your meat right away and got it in the freezer, didn't we?
Exactly. And I will say though, before we harvested that animal, we did make it over to the pond around 9 a.m. or so while we were playing the cat and mouse game. We just kind of were like, hey, look, we're already this far across the property. While we're here, let's just go and check this out to see what we're working with. And when we got there, we saw, it was probably about 5 dozen to 6 dozen birds on this small wetland, certainly enough for you and I to have a good hunt off of. So that was really good to see. It was a whole variety of birds on there, teal, mallards, widgeon, gadwall, some ringnecks. So with that in mind, we knew that we had something to work with for our waterfowl portion of it. But then, after we got my antelope, we went back, deboned everything, got everything broken down, wrapped up and in the freezer, ready to travel. And then I think we headed out that evening afternoon to go and see what the other side of the property had in store for you.
So we were pretty stoked to see some ducks on the pond, and after we got your meat taken care of, exactly, went to the other side because we hadn't even been to the other side yet to see what was over there. We had, like, I had to at least see what was going on over there. So we did, made it over there, and it wasn't long before we were glassing some antelope, and I'm looking at the video of him right now. We saw one, and it was like, I remember looking at him, and I was like, well, he's pretty tall, and he's got good mass, but he doesn't have much cutters. And then, like, he turned his head, and I was like, whoa, and I realized, like, his cutters just flare out to the side, to the point where, like, at certain angles, it looks like he has nothing, but then if he's looking straight on at you, like, you're like, whoa, that's a cool buck.
Very unique for sure.
And I think he was, well, I know he was the biggest buck we had seen to that point. Not a lot bigger than your buck, like just a couple inches bigger than your buck, but like I knew he was as good or maybe a little bigger than your buck. Not that that matters, but just to say he was either the first or second best buck we had seen by a long shot. Like we'd seen lots of like, decent, good little average respectable bucks, but your buck and my buck were the two that we were like, yeah, those are like next level.
Exactly. Those are what we need to kind of hold out for, or at least, to go ahead and try and target.
Because like I said, there was a lot of good, average, low 60s, maybe mid 60s bucks around. But only these two that were like special. And same thing with him. I'm looking at the videos now. He's just, he's real dominant with his does. Any other bucks get around, he's pinning those ears back, and he doesn't even have to do anything. He just walks towards them, and they turn the other direction. So obviously he was dominant. So we were kind of looking at him. It was getting a little later in the day, and I'll just kind of zip through the story here because we've been going for a while anyway, and haven't hit the ducks yet. But feel free to interject. So we decide, hey, let's give it a shot. We run kind of down the road, and then he was basically in this giant basin between two ridges, two kind of rocky ridges with rocky outcroppings on top. And on the back of that was some more public, and some grasslands. And then on the other side of the basin was kind of the road and the end of the property. So there's a bunch of antelope kind of working from the basin and then over the far ridge back into the more public and more grasslands and kind of coming back and forth. So we run up the road and then go in about, I don't know, 150, 200 yards into the basin to a spot where we thought we might be able to get a shot. And he's doing his thing. He's running around does and stuff. And I do actually get set up on him like around like 480. And then he kind of like runs out to like about five. And I'm just like, man, like I can make that shot most of the time, but just something inside of me was just like, you don't need to force it right now. Like, don't take this long shot. Like, just you can get better. So I didn't shoot. Which that is good. That's progression for me. In the past, I probably would have just flung some lead, but trying to work on listening to that small voice in my gut, which said, don't shoot. So I didn't. Then we bent back to the road, back down the following that ridge to the end of the basin that they were in, and went deeper in to the next ridge, the far ridge that comprised this little basin. And started glassing, looking for that buck again, because he kind of disappeared when he went over the top, because that's what he went over the top of the far ridge. So we were glassing. I was like, man, he's got to be in here somewhere. And I kind of feel like it was just a matter of time before we'd see him again. And we saw a bunch of other bucks, and I was, confirming, because this guy's very identifiable the way his cutter's flared out. So we're looking, we're not seeing him. At some point, maybe an hour or so later, it's getting kind of close to the end of the day. I think Taylor, I think you said, dude, I think I see him. Now, you just had your binos, and I pulled up the spotter, and sure enough, yeah, he was running from that far piece of public basically back towards our basin on the property that we were on. So I was like, oh man. And then he started kind of messing around with a group of does on that backside of that far ridge where he had disappeared over. So I kind of was like, well, like I said, I'm kind of more aggressive, getting close to the end of the day. It's like, let's work down the opposite side of this ridge he's on, so we're out of visual, and get to where we think he is, and let's see if we can pop over the top and get a shot. So as we did, work down there. I get up there, I get the rifle set. We sneak in, we're in range. I think we're about 350 to 380, somewhere in there. Getting set up. Jamin's getting set up. And like just as Jamin gets set and I'm set, the whole group just blows out. And I was confused for a second, then I felt that there was wind on the back of my neck, and I had failed to take into account the wind. For some reason with antelope, I just, at least, not anymore probably, but at this point, I just hadn't been considering the wind as much as I should have been, and they winded us, and so I was kind of bummed, because I thought that was it, but and I was like, maybe we could, run down and get back in position. And And Jamin was like, well, they're just going to wind us again. And I was like, yeah, you're probably right. So we just left it. And they tend to stay while they do move around quite a bit, They tend to stay in a general area, it seems. So I was a little bummed, but I wasn't that bummed. Like, we'll find them again tomorrow. So we headed out, and that was it for that day. Thoughts on that? That hit everything?
No, I think you hit everything perfectly. Like you said, I mean, he was very identifiable. So even at a distance, if you saw him with his head facing towards you or away from you, you saw those cutters flared out to the side, and you're like, that is for sure him. So again, it was cool to have stuck with that buck for so long. And again, not to, because we could have gone after one of the other ones that was in and around us at that time, but because of the perseverance there from you, you were like, no, I'm at least going to give it a full other day to try and get this buck before, we have to start trying to make another plan or decision.
That's right. I remember saying to you, I was like, I'm gonna try one more day to kill this buck, and if I don't, then I'll just take what I can get and we'll shift over to duck hunting.
Right. But as we'll see the next day, I think things kind of worked out.
And I will say that is progression on my part too. I think in the past the pressure to get it done sooner might have resulted in me just saying, well, forget he's cool buck, but forget him. I'll just take whatever nice one that comes by next, but for whatever reason, after seeing that one, I was like, nah, that's the one I want. And so I was somewhat proud of myself for that. So anyway, next day we get out there and we get to the property and we realized we had forgotten something, a piece of production gear. And me being sort of impatient, I hate going back for anything. I was like, well, I'm just going to stay here and I'll just kind of glass while you guys get that, and I'll see you in a little bit. Taylor decided he would stay with me. Probably not the right decision. Anyway, didn't turn out to matter that much, but we decided to do that. So me and Taylor are walking along the road. Jamin went back to get the piece of gear, and we're walking, and because we were in Jamin's truck. So, but anyway, we're walking, and then we're going through the basin before. Like, there's a smaller basin before you got to that big one where we had spent the day hunting the day before. And it was pretty close to the road. So I wasn't expecting anything to be in there. I thought he was going to be on the far side again. And we're walking, we're just kind of shooting the breeze, talking about Ducks Unlimited and stuff. And, like, I just look up and I see, like, a skylined antelope. I'm like, oh, geez. So I pull up the binos. Of course, it's him. Right there, and I'm like, oh, geez. So we just kind of quit, like, slowly back out, and I just like, well, whatever. So I went up on the ridge, and I got set up on him. Jamin wasn't back yet, but I was just waiting. And as soon as it was a couple minutes, and Jamin got back, he runs up there with the camera, and I have the buck in my crosshairs at 400 yards for over 5 minutes, and he's just standing there. And that's definitely a doable shot for me if I'm set up right. And I'm just waiting for Jamin to get set up. And I'm not kidding. And I've watched the footage too. Literally the same second Jamin goes, "Okay, you're good. Go for it." He starts to walk and just disappears over the horizon. And I was kind of beating myself up for, like, going in there and basically spooking him out before Jamin was there, and thinking we'd blown again. So now this is the third time I've had this buck in my crosshairs, and either he winded us, saw us, or just wasn't quite a good shot. So I'm starting to build a history with this thing. But I figured still we'd have a shot if we could. He wasn't spooked really or anything. I still we'd have figured we'd have a shot if we just stuck with it. So at this point, now we go all the way back to the basin, kind of where we were the night before, and start looking for him. And we're up there. Well, we spent a little time kind of chasing after him, and we decided that we should go to the far side because that's where we kind of figured he would end up. At this point, he's with a group of does in the middle of the basin. And the way this basin is, it's big enough to where you can't shoot from the ridge into the middle of the basin. It's too long. and there's no cover, so you can't really like just walk into it after them. Like they'll just bust you. So you have to kind of like wait for them to go to one side or the other. So they're in the middle. We decide to go to the far end. We go to the far end, and of course, he decides to go to the other end.
Yep.
So we're kind of pinned down on the far end for a while, looking for him. Can't really find him. At this point, we had another, I had probably a 65, maybe 67 inch buck. I'm looking at a video right now of him. Just walk straight up to us, you know, get with probably within 100 yards. And, you know, I think in the past, I would have just said, you know, let's get this done. He's a nice buck. You know, too bad we didn't get that big one, but I'm just going to take this guy. And it would have been easy. But
Yep.
I was just like, nah, man, we're going to get this one or nothing, or give it a full day anyway. So passed him. And then at this point, we find the buck again. He's all the way on the far side where we had just come from, like towards the road. And he's chasing a doe around, chasing a doe around. And then finally, we see the doe kind of disappear near in the area of some other does that are bedded, and then we don't see him for 10, 15 minutes. So we're kind of discussing back and forth what are we going to do. Eventually, we kind of decide, you know, most likely he's bedded. If he wasn't bedded, we would have seen him pop out one side or the other by now. And this is getting to be about, I don't know, probably 11 o'clock in the morning or so. We'll see. I shot him at 10:57. So this is probably like 10:30. And so we're like, all right, let's go one more time. And it's probably, I don't know, what would you say, like a mile over there?
Easily, yeah.
Yeah, maybe a little more. Because we had to go down the ridge, up the basin, and then all the way up the opposite ridge about halfway. So it's a pretty good little walk. So anyway, so we get up there. We don't know exactly where he's at. Wind is not great. But we kind of know where we think the area he's at is. So we get up there, don't see him after the first one, don't see him after the second one. Then we get to the third little rise that we can kind of come over, and I'm thinking he's got to be right there, like probably 200 yards or less. And I'm hoping that the wind stays okay because it's pretty bad. So I actually circled a little bit more than I wanted to around to the left to try to get the wind better, which actually turned out to be really good. And I get down and I start crawling and I look up and I spot him. He's right there, bedded, facing away 200 yards. And I was like, okay, it's on. Jamin gets set up. I had some really thick brush in front of me, which was kind of annoying. But at this point, some of his does start to, I don't know if they heard me, smelled me, saw me, whatever. They know something's up, but they're not spooked, but they stand up. And then he stands up, and I'm like, oh no. Like, I just figured any second he's just going to run and it's done.
Right.
And so I'm kind of like, oh man. And then, but they just were like, just curious enough to like come in and look. They weren't scared yet. They're just like, what is going on? So they're actually walking towards us. And then I'm about to shoot, and James's like, wait, he's behind your head. So what happened is he'd come in between, or he'd. My head was in between the camera and the buck, and Jamie had to reposition. And he's like, okay, oh, you're good. And then I was repositioning, trying to get over this brush. Anyway, at this point, he's like 200 yards, and I just, he's facing full on, and I pull the trigger and just nailed him, and he went straight down. And I was super stoked, man. Like, one of the most, I just come off a really tough hunt where I ate tag soup, and just, this being the, I guess, fourth time we had hunted the same buck, even though it's not crazy, but over a 2 day period, it just felt really cool to get it done on this specific animal we were going for.
Yes,
So
absolutely.
what was your perspective of the whole, you don't have to give me the whole story, but what was your perspective on the kind of whole deal?
Yeah, I mean it was fun taking a step back now and being sort of the passenger on your hunt. Again, just kind of watching how you and your cameraman approach the situation. And I felt like I was just there, like I was gonna help in any way that I could, but my biggest job was to not be detractive from the hunt itself, where again, just extra person moving around.
Yeah.
Like, as badly as I wanted to watch the action unfold, I was like, it's better if I just kind of, as you go up over the ridge, I don't need to follow you to try and get
Yeah.
eyes on the critter or anything like that. I'm okay just being back, filming with my phone, getting some Snapchats and stuff like that of all the action that's happening from back there, and just let you and Jamin do your thing.
For
But
sure.
again, I mean, props for you for, one, sticking with it with that animal, and then two, despite the opportunities that you had with others, or even to take one of those more questionable shots, further out shots, or trying to rush a shot. It was great to see you have that forethought to just, take a second, slow down, assess the situation, and make the decision that ultimately allowed you to get within that 200-yard range and make a really clean, quick, ethical shot.
Cool. Yeah, man. Yeah, I mean, I wish they all went like that. Unfortunately, they don't, but hopefully I'm working towards, more hunts going that way. And so it's all a growth process. But yeah, this one went really smooth and really cool buck. Definitely my biggest one to date. He had a really cool coat, the way he one of his throat patches, like the white, went all the way up behind his neck. Like, it didn't stop, it continued like a necklace all the way around, like really pretty. And I think he's around that 75 mark, 75 inches, so mid, maybe mid high 70s. So not like anything insane, but like really, really solid buck, especially for that area and what we'd been seeing. So I was and still am very stoked with him, and really cool hunt. Everything went great. So yeah, man, that's kind of how the antelope went down, and then we decided we were gonna shift gears over to ducks, and I'm gonna let you kind of take the lead on that part of the conversation, since basically I let you take the lead on that hunt too. I was relying on kind of your expertise there, and so yeah, man, take us through where it went from there.
Sure, yeah, I'll do my best, and obviously, interject where you need. So like we had said, the day before, we had gotten eyes on the pond, kind of middle of the morning, saw that there was a fair number of birds on there, again, enough for us to work with for this hunt. It wasn't an overly large wetland, slough, pothole, whatever you would like to call it.
No.
Maybe a couple acres, if that. And on the southern side of it, there was what looked like some decent cover, with like a patch of cattails. And we decided to go down there the night before the hunt and just kind of stomp around, get an idea of what the pond consisted of. Could we even walk out in this pond
Yeah.
to retrieve birds, decoys, and all of that too, which was really important. So when we got down there, I slipped my waders on and started just walking around because we didn't have a dog on this trip or anything, obviously. And fortunately, the bottom was firm enough that I felt comfortable that, hey, if we are fortunate enough to down some birds, we're going to be able to retrieve them. Worst case scenario, we'll be able to have the wind push them to one side of the bank or the other. Checked out the cattails. It was extremely good cover.
Yeah, it was.
And so we decided for that next morning, that's where we were going to set up. The wind, when I was looking at it, we were supposed to have a westerly wind. The days prior leading up to this, we had been dealing with like an east southeast wind, but it was supposed to shift overnight and we would have a good wind from our west. And my plan was, all right, the birds will be coming in from our right, from the east facing into that west wind, and we should have a nice side two shot. So we got in there the next morning, gave us I think about an hour to walk in there, get set up
Yeah.
before legal time, get the decoys set out, which we managed to just borrow a couple dozen decoys from one of my coworkers who lives in the area.
Yeah,
So
shout out
shout
to
out to
him.
Robert Hathaway. That was really nice of him. He set us up with, a few dozen mallards and various dabbling ducks for us to put out, teal and
Yeah.
all that.
Pretty good little spread.
So get the decoys set, get settled into our little cattail hide, get Jamin set up with his cameras and microphones and everything, And unfortunately, the wind never shifted. It was still coming out of the east, and which was okay because again we were set up for a side shot, so I was able to just shift the decoys. But I was afraid that at any point that wind was going to shift, and then everything was going to be set up incorrectly. So I kind of set them up with the hope that the wind was going to be shifting any second to a west wind, which just never really happened that morning. So, but right out of the gate, before legal, we've got ducks flying in everywhere, landing in the decoys, landing on the other side of the pond. And right when legal hits, we have a couple birds coming in that we managed to knock down. The pond kind of clears out, but then there's still some more birds coming in. We managed to harvest a couple more widgeons and teal. I think that was the morning we also shot the pintail. But what we were noticing as the morning went on is that the birds were really favoring sort of the northeastern side of the pond, which is where we'd seen a group of them the day before. But the place was small enough that we figured we were going to be able to pull them. And like I said, we did manage to get some come our way, but a lot of the birds were favoring that northeast portion. So once we wrapped up with the hunt, I decided I was like, you know, I really want to go and check out that other side, but there was pretty much no cover over there. So even if we did find something that was different that we liked, I wasn't sure how we were going to set up on it. So we walked over there, and what we found is that the pond was a little bit deeper over on that side. There was a lot more aquatic vegetation growing in that deeper water. And so I'm guessing that's why the birds were favoring it, just more forage for them to key in on. And fortunately, we found a little bluff on that northern side of the pond where we thought we could put our backs up against so we could have back cover. It had some shrubs and some grasses and stuff growing over the top of it, so we had a little bit of head cover. And Robert had been nice enough to give us a panel blind as well, so we figured we could set the panel blind up in front of that bluff. We would end up standing in the water and have a good hide to try and hunt this spot a second day. Even though we had done some shooting that morning, there were still some birds that were trying to use that area, and we felt like we hadn't blown it out too badly in case we needed to come back there. So that was that morning. We did go to look for some other spots, but I don't, is there anything that you wanted to touch on, or what were
Nah,
your thoughts
I just
of how
remember
it all
thinking.
went?
Yeah, I just remember thinking it's a small pond. It could be a one and done type thing, but I remember after that first morning, like it was good enough where I was like, I bet we could get one more like pretty decent hunt out of this before like they're too educated. But more than that, probably not. But yeah, I was thinking we'll get in there and get in on something again.
So then, like I said, we went out that evening just to try and look at some other spots, like down along the river, tried to see if we could find any other potholes or anything like that that we could get on. But we ultimately decided that going back to that same pond the same, that we had been in the morning was going to be our best option. So got there about the same time, hiked everything in, got the panel blind grassed and set up, which I was really happy with. How that cover was for us and
Yeah, it was
everything.
good.
And fortunately, on this morning, there was no doubt that the wind was going to shift, and it was puffing pretty steady
Oh, it was
out of
crazy.
that west. And again, I set us up kind of in the middle of the pond, because now the birds were going to be coming from left to right. I wanted to get away from that far bank or the bank to our left to make sure that the birds just didn't skip over top of our decoys. I wanted them to kind of act as a wall when the birds were coming in from the left. They'd be, and then right when they got into the hole there, they'd be centered up for us, and we'd have a good shot. And it worked out perfect. Birds started coming back in. Managed to kill a couple more teal, widgeon. We had some gadwall. And a ringneck even that day. So it was good. You know, we did just as well as we had the day before. which I was really pleased with because, yeah, I was a little bit nervous too, like I said, that we weren't going to see any flight or birds would be skipping over us. And then eventually that wind kind of shifted just a little bit to where rather than it being kind of right to left, it was kind of quartering into our face. And it picked up substantially. I mean, we had it blowing probably sustained at what, 35, even 40 possibly.
Oh yeah, it was good.
It
It was going.
was ripping. I mean, there was white caps on this little pond, and it got to the point where it quartered so much into our face that now the birds would be coming over the top of us. And we just said, you know, hey, we've had another good shoot. I don't think there's any reason that we need to keep getting beat up by this wind, and it's just going to be more difficult for us with the direction that the wind's coming from now to try and get these birds to finish properly. So we packed up there and called it a day and got back to the house. We watched plenty of football that weekend and got all of our meat broken down and packaged up for our flights home.
Yeah, man. Yeah, it was a really cool hunt. It was like almost like a lodge hunt or something like that, 'cause like our Airbnb was so cool and just the opportunities we had. But again, this is something that is 100% doable with a little bit of extra effort on a public land hunt, and even finding a cool place to stay. Airbnb has some cool stuff on there. Just a quick, hot tip: if you're gonna be near Glen Rock, check out. There's like a cabin there. You can find it on Airbnb. But anyway, I don't know. Just any tips or thoughts you'd have for guys that might want to try this?
Yeah, I guess like you're saying, do your scouting beforehand. Onyx or any of the online mappings are great tools. That's always what we did. It's just even once we got out to Wyoming in the past, I would just start scanning Onyx and any piece of water that looked like it was publicly accessible. I was marking it, and me and my buddies were like, "All right, hey, this is the next pin that we're driving to. We'll see if there's any birds, and if not, I've got another pin marked down the road from it." So that scouting in advance definitely pays off for sure. And you can typically, like you're saying, you know, you don't know for sure what's going to be there when you get there, but as you get used to doing that online scouting, you can certainly, you know, have a general idea of what you should find when you get there, and typically it pays off. So definitely the scouting, that's going to be your biggest friend. You don't need a lot as far as like the duck hunting side of it goes. You know, we've always done these trips pretty minimalistically with just a couple dozen floaters. It seems like there's always wind on the prairie, so we haven't necessarily had to tote motion decoys or anything like that. Cover is typically the hardest thing to find out there though, because you're dealing with, you know, a lot of sandy banks. Like I said, there's been a lot of drought out in this area for the last couple of years, so a lot of the ponds are drawn down. So where even a pond might have cover around the edges of it, but now the water is 20 yards, 30, 40 yards from where that bank is. So you have to get creative with what you have to do to get hidden and to be able to be close to that X.
And I think one thing you said you guys did actually on one of those hunts that would sound like a really good affordable idea is you just went and got some burlap material and basically just hid under the burlap like a lay down blind and just waited on
Yeah.
it, and it worked pretty
Yeah.
good.
Yeah, I don't want to give away all my secrets now, but no, I'm kidding. no, we've had to do that, you know. Some of these areas, it's just a complete sand bank. And I mean, there's nothing for tens of yards to try and give you any cover. So yeah, a nice piece of burlap blended in perfectly, used our backpacks to prop our heads up and everything like we were in a layout blind, and it worked out well. We killed, you know, two dozen ducks that day that we did it.
So you get creative and grab a couple buddies and an antelope tag and a duck stamp and all your licenses and stuff. It's a cool hunt to try. If you've hunted antelope a few times and want to add something different to it, or even if you just want to go out and just do a duck trip on public land, like it can be done. So this was a really cool hunt. We've been planning it for a while. Definitely want to say thanks to the guys from Infinite Outdoors for helping us put it together. Check them out. That could be another option if you want to go that route. But this was a really unique episode. The first episode, again, like I know I already said it, but circle back to, you know, waterfowling is how I got my start in the outdoors. It's how I, you know, got my love for hunting from my old man. And, you know, obviously it's super important to do our part for conservation, you know, take that extra step. Obviously your money when you buy gear and guns and ammo goes towards conservation, but take that extra step, you know, like I'm a member of the Boone and Crockett Club, a member of Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, Ducks Unlimited, Mule Deer Foundation as well. So, you know, do, and it's usually pretty affordable, pretty cheap. But, you know, do your part for conservation, give back, even if you want to go do a volunteer project or go to a banquet or, you know, buy something at an auction. Just do something to give back to conservation, because these organizations really are doing good work, like Ducks Unlimited and those other ones I mentioned. So, this is going to be a really cool episode. It's a unique episode. It's the first time I've done anything on the show other than Western Big Game. And, you know, I think I'm going to start branching out a little more, start doing some more fun hunts like this, maybe some more family-related stuff. So be on the lookout for that. Like, you know, not everything I'm realizing has to be a crazy backcountry mission. Of course, I'm always going to do those adventure hunts and those cool stuff like that. But you know, doing something like this every now and then, like that's maybe not as physically strenuous, but just a really cool opportunity and a good hunt. I'm going to start doing some more of that stuff. So Taylor, just in closing, like, let me know, like, what, do you have any thoughts or in closing? And then also, where can people go if they do want to check out more about Ducks Unlimited?
Yeah, absolutely. No, again, I just want to thank you, Hunter, for the opportunity to be on this with you, to not only harvest my first Western big game animal, but to also be able to talk about Ducks Unlimited.
Yeah.
This is an organization that I've been extremely passionate about prior to coming to work for them. I mean, I started off as a volunteer. I was an area chairman for my local chapter. I was in college. I was a member of the University of Delaware committee. Mm-hmm. So it's something that I've been around for a long time, and that I believe wholeheartedly in the mission and the work that we're doing. So we're always looking for volunteers, no matter where you are. We've got chapters in all 50 states. We hold 5,000 plus events a year. If you can't make it to an event, if you don't have time to volunteer, consider becoming a donor. We've got lots of great information on www.ducks.org, D-U-C-K-S.org. You can go on there. It's got all sorts of resources, can point you in the right direction if you're trying to find an event near you, you want to sign up to be a volunteer, whatever it might be. I definitely recommend people going and checking it out. And like you said, you know, no matter, it doesn't have to be Ducks Unlimited. I'm biased. I hope that it is to you. But, you know, if you're a turkey hunter, NWTF, you're an elk hunter, Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, whatever it might be, you know, definitely try and support these organizations that are giving back to the resources that we all enjoy and prosper so much of from. So,
yeah,
they're great. I can't say enough about any of the nonprofits that are doing work in this space.
Yeah, man. Well, yeah, I really enjoyed hunting with you. Had fun. Think you had a good time too. So
absolutely.
Hopefully, maybe we can team up again in the future and do something else cool. Nothing in the mind yet, but if you think of anything, let me know, and I'll definitely be thinking, because I would like to do more stuff like this. It was pretty cool.
Absolutely, for sure. I would 100% be down. It was a great time. It was a really great learning experience. And again, thank you so much.